the land that basically, MSU's campus, Detroit, pretty much the entire state, right, is on land that, you know, was indigenous land for what we call the Three Fires Confederacy, the Ojibwe, the Odawa, and the Potawatomi people. And we're still here. I know there's sometimes confusion, especially with our history and textbooks. They often, believe that, our history started when Europeans arrived and ended in about the 1800s, but that's not the fact. We were here well before Europeans arrival on, in this area. And this land was what we, subsisted on, to survive on and to raise our families for thousands of years. So, when we hear about things like land acknowledgement, it's a way for institutions, whether they be institutions of higher education, businesses, high schools, et cetera, that are now residing on this land, to acknowledge that this is land that was taken, even if we want to say it was done through treaties. Oftentimes those treaties were signed under duress, and they were not very seldom honored either by the state, let alone the U.S. government. So that land acknowledgement is a way for these institutions to say, we understand that you're still here. We understand that this is your land, and it means a great deal to you culturally, and is part of how we, come to see ourselves. A lot of our identity is through the land that we live on, within our tribal communities.
And in a 2021 CNN article, reporter wrote about land acknowledgments and said sometimes they're often hollow promises. And how do you believe or feel about that?
And there's a lot of credibility to that. Mm-hmm. That is a concern that many of our community members on our campuses as well, is throughout the state. And we have, you can read it, but there's a lot that comes with that. Once that's been read, there's a lot of responsibilities and obligations. And oftentimes, the person who may have read it or the institution may not have read it, unless they've had communications with our communities and with our people, don't understand that, there are some expectations that come with that. There's, especially with a state institution, a land grant institution, or as we like to say, a land grab institution like Michigan State University, that benefited from that land that was taken from our peoples. It's important that they understand that just once it's read, that there's more there. There's a deep need for many in our community to sustain our language and sustain our culture, sustain the foods that many in the world have come to take for granted that these were foods that they've always had, but they weren't. They were foods that originated here out of the North and South American continents that were cultivated for thousands of years by the indigenous people. It's important that once that acknowledgement is made, that they honor things like the Michigan Indian Tuition Waiver if they're an institution, that they do and enact policies that show that they support the indigenous students and faculty and staff.
And, speaking about your experiences, you keep saying, our experiences. Talk a little bit about the Chippewa Indians of Sainte-Sault Marie and what it means to you and what it means to you, especially when we're talking about the land acknowledgments. What does that mean for your tribe going forward?
My relatives would be upset with me that I didn't acknowledge that. Yes, I am a member of the Sault Ste. Marie tribe, the Chippewa Indians. We are the Ojibwe band up there and located near Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. I had relatives on both sides of the river in the state. We didn't have borders until Europeans came. We crossed the rivers back and forth, I have a lot of family over in Sault, Ontario, and Thessalon and Garden River area. Land acknowledgements, for us and what it means, I'll take that in twofold. I'm a proud member of my tribe. We're one of the larger tribes in the region. We are known as the keepers of the faith, as members of the Three Fire Confederacy, as I mentioned, that are made up of the Ojibwe, the Odawa, and the Potawatomi people. We take a lot of honor in that role. And, we're proud to be aligned with our, brothers that are in these other organizations within these other tribal communities and nations. And, you know, the land acknowledgement, you know, for me growing up in a town outside of the reservation, it's important for me in the aspect of there's a lot of people that, you know, when I was growing up and still to this day, you know, have spoken not necessarily very positively about our native and our tribal communities and, you know, the different aspects of what we bring to those communities. So being able to hear when I go back, maybe the school that I attended, you know, or others, you know, read that land acknowledgement, it's letting me know that they see us, they hear us, and they know that we're still here. And that goes a long way for, you know, in my opinion, helping build those relationships and bonds that we need to be able to move forward and get past, you know, what is really a history, a really bad history of, you know, pretty, you know, awful physical, mental, social, you know, abuse. And some of that still continues in many of our communities and the trauma is long lasting. You know, but yeah, it's hard for me to sum up in a short period of time, but that's just give you a little insight to how I feel in general.
And Kevin, speaking from your own personal experience and experiences of others as well around you, microaggressions that Native peoples face on a daily basis, what are some of those things and what do they look like and how can we combat that as a society? I know for myself personally, I would not know. So what are some microaggressions that you all are facing?
Some of them do kind of what I consider everyday lexicon. You know, it's unfortunate. So we may not tie that in with a microaggression, but when they're said, they are seen and felt that way by individuals such as myself and others. You know, I've been called chief before, you know, hey, chief, I'm not a chief. I have not earned that honor with my tribe in any way, shape or form. And, you know, it diminishes the role of our chiefs or our megas that they play in our communities. You know, you've heard probably in meetings say, hey, well, let's together have a powwow about that. Or, you know, if there's a drought, somebody said, maybe somebody should do a rain dance. Yeah. Or you've heard the saying that there's too many chiefs or not enough Indians. So those are things that low man on the totem pole. I've heard people use, you know, what's your spirit animal? You're being on the war path or you need to circle the wagons. Those have just become part of the lexicon, but they are negative, have negative connotations to them. And they have an impact. Ones that are more common, but probably may not, you know, be ones that people are, again, aware of, but they're out there, is, again, a lot of our people have started to reclaim our, you know, our Anishinaabe names, our native names. And the mispronunciation of those names after you've worked with, you know, someone, either a purpose or not, you know, is again, a form of a microaggression. You know, one of the things that probably people are most recently happened on the national level is I think an ABC host, I don't remember the name of the woman, you know, was talking about indigenous creatures during Native Heritage Month, you know, and it's harmful. But, you know, the one thing is within our tribal communities, we use humor to kind of get over some of that. And the memes that resulted in that throughout social media, you know, were quite funny about us, you know, being indigenous creatures. But those are the kind of the microaggressions that we still face to this day. People asking about, you know, do you still live, you know, in teepees or lodges? Do you live on a reservation? You know, my son, even in school the other day, who, you know, was telling people he's Native. Someone said, well, I didn't think the Native still existed. You know, those things hurt. You know, he came home, he was quite upset. He's like, can you imagine why somebody would say that to me? You know, people, you know, continue to ask questions like, why do you get a free, you know, education, or why don't you have to pay taxes? And again, there's a lot of myths and misconceptions to some of this, but those are microaggressions that, you know, we and probably many of our communities face. You know, how much Indian are you is another one that we've heard. And, you know, you have a beard. I heard Indians can't grow beards, and I'm someone who has a beard myself, but I'm clearly Native, so we can. But yeah, those are just some of the things that tend to be out there that we deal with.
Connections do you see, or how do you see different people of color groups working together to make Native American people seen and heard?
the violence that, you know, our communities of color face across the board. You know, our Native people face the same in many of our communities. You know, high rates, you know, of you know, police brutality, high rates of missing Indigenous women. So we do have a lot of similarities. And in that case, we do need to support. And I think you saw that when you know, the murders of members of the African-American community were happening. Our Indigenous community saw that, heard that, and stood by it. Instead of saying, well, we're here too and dealing with it, we said, we're here with you. And I think that's important to continue. You know, what can be done, though, for others that want to learn more, you know, about the Indigenous people of this region or the country as a whole? You can always ask, you know, Native members. But the one thing is, I don't speak, and I should have prefaced before today, is, you know, what I share today is from my perspective and my experiences. I don't speak for, you know, all Natives everywhere, let alone here in the state, let alone anywhere else in the United States. And that's something our communities of color are probably familiar with having to do, is say, you know, I'm not speaking for everyone. But at the same time, you know, I would say that it shows a little bit of initiative, and it shows that you actually are interested if you've done some research before you've come to us to ask questions. And, you know, doing a little bit of that research about what are the tribes of Michigan. Like, I think if we asked the average person on the street, if you could name one of the 12 federally recognized tribes, let alone the four state recognized tribes, you know, they probably could name maybe one, maybe two. And that's probably because of the casinos that we have. You know, if you asked them what the Three Fires Confederacy was, chances are most outside of our, you know, Indigenous communities wouldn't know. So, you know, looking those things up, learning about the history and the cultures and the, you know, what those communities, you know, brought to this area and continue to bring to this area, you know, is something that I think everyone can do, no matter what age or range you are, young, old, or in between, just doing a little bit of that. And there's a lot of information out there. Like, if you just Googled, you know, the 12 federally recognized, you know, tribal nations of Michigan, you'd be surprised how many different links pop up, as well as, you know, the Three Fires Confederacy out there. There's a lot of information to come by. But those are some of the ways that you can do it. To me, you know, but I would do some of that research before you go and ask. It just shows us that you are really committed and interested in learning more, and not just asking because, you know, you don't have the initiative to go look it up yourself.